morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me, wearing very thick sunglasses.
Dark glasses, yeah.
Gary LeMaster, we think he wants to join Tom's band and do rock and roll.
I now have bionic eyes. So.
And you had cataract.
I had cataract surgery.
With us today is a candidate, Democratic candidate, for a state representative from District 6, Lanny Morrison.
It's a pleasure to be here with you today, Steve and Gary and Tom.
Tell us a little bit about your background, Lanny. Who are you? What is your background in business? I know you're a small businessman, and you've also been a consultant to half dozen state governments and the federal government on health care issues of a particular focus.
Actually, 20 state governments.
Okay.
So, but we won't quibble about the numbers. I'm a first-generation American, Steve. My mother was born in Poland and got out on one of the last boats before the Nazis invaded Poland. Being from an Orthodox Jewish family, if she hadn't gotten out, I wouldn't be here. She was fortunate she was able to come to the U.S. Grew up very poor in a small town, about the same size population as Flagstaff. About 60,000 population when I was growing up what was then rural Illinois. Now it's a suburb of Chicago. It was very, very different. My American dream at that time was to have a bed of my own, and I didn't realize that dream until my sister got a full college scholarship, and at age 17, my brother and I each got our own beds. But my background, and you asked about business, is I've worked for small, medium, and large companies. For a Fortune 500 company, I was responsible for strategic planning and also government relations. On the strategic planning side, I did business development for the company, advising them. And when I say a Fortune 500 company, at the time they had over 50,000 employees and being located in 20 different states. I helped create thousands of jobs around the country by developing new products, expanding existing markets, and going into new markets. On the government relations side, I had responsibility for dealing with Congress plus 20 states. So I had a lot of experience in dealing with that, and also public policy experience working with all those other companies of health policy, workforce development, behavioral health care, a number of different areas.
Arizona is still lagging behind the rest of the nation in job creation and economic development. What would you do? What would be your approach? I know that you talk about strengthening education in Arizona as a way to bring jobs here and create jobs. How does this work exactly?
Well, the number one issue for me is our investment in public education. In June, I went to a conference in Phoenix sponsored by the Flynn Foundation. That's Flynn with an I, that has pumped more than $50 million into Arizona to develop the bioscience industry. And business leaders from the bioscience industry were at this conference. All incumbents were invited and all candidates were invited. The two incumbents who I'm running against chose not to come for whatever reason. A lot of the discussion was around tax credits to attract business. And I posed the question to the business leaders when I was there that if you take something like the research and the development tax credit, there's 30 states that offer them. So if Arizona can't compete with Texas and California and New York and New Jersey on a dollar-for-dollar basis, what is it that will attract investors? And what each one of those business leaders said was what the investors look at is how much you spend per pupil for K through 12 education. That's the number one thing they look at because they're looking to bring families to Arizona or to any other state, and they want a good educational system. They also want educated and trained workers. And where are those workers going to come from? And we've been cutting back and cutting back and cutting back on public education from preschool, K through 12, community colleges, and the three state universities. That's the number one issue, according to the business leaders, that's keeping us from recovering.
So many of the businesses that we bring into Arizona are call centers and low wage industries. And what you're trying to do is bring in a lot of complex industries and that have a lot of different kinds of workers doing a lot of different kinds of things.
But pay higher salaries.
Absolutely. And that's absolutely critical that those kinds of businesses can come into any area, including rural areas. With some of the tax credit programs, very little goes to the rural areas. If you look at the what's called the angel tax credit, one investor in Sedona, five in Flagstaff, and all the rest of them in Tucson and Phoenix. So we're having trouble competing for jobs in the rural areas compared to the valley and compared to Tucson. And we need to do something about it. And high tech is one of those areas where we can compete because it's not dependent on a lot of infrastructure that we presently don't have, which is an area also that business says we need to invest in.
I've always wondered why Flagstaff in particular didn't have more think tanks, electronic internet businesses. Why it never developed like, given the beauty of the place, the attractiveness to the kinds of people that you seek to work in and run these industries, why it never took off, why there's not, more of the sort of, high-end businesses in Flagstaff.
Well, it actually, Steve, is taking off. And it took off really when W.L. Gore decided to locate its medical products division in Flagstaff. And it's the largest employer besides the university. And they're making medical products in four different locations. They're also now doing some work in the valley, but there's opportunity for expansion there. The bioscience industry is thriving in the Flagstaff area. And one of the reasons it is because there's a collaborative that's developed and a collaboration that's developed between the university and the business community and government. For example, laboratories were built by that collaborative to create space so that what bioscience needs is laboratories, and they're actually building more right now.
So education and jobs are your top priorities. What other issues do you see in this campaign and if you were elected?
Well, infrastructure is one of those issues. When I mean infrastructure, I'm talking largely about the what's called the sweep of the Highway User Revenue Fund, or HERF, $750 million since 2002. This has put pressure on the cities and counties to try to maintain their roads, to try to maintain their bridges and other parts of the infrastructure because the money was taken away by the legislature in order to balance the budget in other areas. So you have things like Proposition 406 and 403 in Flagstaff and Coconino County, where the voters are having to decide that they need to make investments to take care of the roads. Rural Arizona has among the most dangerous roads in the United States, and we need to do something about it. That's one key area. Second one was child welfare. It looks like we're starting to head in the right direction. We're not out of the woods. This was an area where, as everyone knows from reading the newspapers, more than 6,500 cases were left uninvestigated for up to 4 years for abused and neglected children, where the reports were made but never investigated. I find it absolutely astounding that nobody seemed to have known that this was going on, because every year the Department of Economic Security prepared a report that said, here's the number of uninvestigated cases we have. And it went to every member of the legislature and the governor, and nobody did anything about it for 4 years until it hit the front page of the Arizona Republic.
The problem with Child Protective Services is it's been a scandal for years, and when we did a program on it, we researched back. And the legislature has been warned over and over again by incidents and by children dying because of lack of supervision by the agency over and over again. And what struck us at the time, Lanny, was that nobody did anything about it. Nobody took action on it, even when they did know that there was a problem.
They did something about it. They cut the budget for the department in order to balance the state budget.
So history is something that I know when it comes to Child Protective Services. 15 years ago, I worked on the national evaluation of child welfare reform, and Arizona had a staffing problem back then, and it did not get better even after a 2005 special session that was supposed to fix it. If you know there's a problem and you don't address the problem, and as Gary said, you actually take money away, to me that says plain and simply, you just don't care.
I think that's basically when we talk to reporters and stuff in Phoenix, was that they say, we've told the story. If people don't do anything about it, it's really on them. We've done our job. And I don't think that they had done it sufficiently, but they certainly people were warned. You like the way the reforms now going on to Child Protective Services? I think that's the right direction.
It's in the right direction. Where we are truly underfunded is on the preventive services side. So often child neglect cases are related to the lack of availability of affordable child care services. So children are left unattended. I see that in my own neighborhood with 5, 6, 7-year-olds waiting for the bus stop by themselves, coming home, going home to an unattended house. Technically, that would be child neglect. In some instances, if there's something happens to the child, then it will be investigated and it can be reported and the child could be taken away. But preventive services are absolutely critical. Substance abuse treatment services, mental health treatment services, to equip families to be able to take care of their children properly.
But in most families, both parents have to work full time in order to support themselves.
Absolutely. That's why something like affordable child care is really, really critical to support those families.
It seems popular to cut budgets for, the first cuts seem to come in regulatory agencies and preventive services. Then when something happens because, they can't do their job, they can't meet the caseload, then it becomes a big argument that government is letting us down. It's, we don't give them the resources they need to do their jobs properly. Then when they don't do their jobs properly, then we criticize them for being incompetent.
Absolutely, Gary. I have great respect for child protective service workers. They are among the most dedicated, unappreciated people that work anywhere. I've met many, many, many of them over the years around the country and in the state. A good friend of mine in Flagstaff, who owns a restaurant now there, grew up with a mother who was the only child protective services in Yavapai County at the time she was in high school.
We read the website, Child Protective Services, and 90% of the website is trying to convince you that you don't want a job with Child Protective Services. And it's very accurate. The distances you have to travel in rural Arizona, the lack of pay, the number of cases, they lay it all out because they just don't want to hire people who are going to turn around and quit on them when they find out how tough it is. It seems like it sounds like it. Extraordinarily tough job to do under any circumstances.
One of my oldest friends used to be the director of the Department of Public Welfare in West Virginia, and his first job was going into the hollers of West Virginia to take kids away from their parents. And the stories he used to tell me about first going into those howlers, whether he was getting too close to a still or whatever it was, but he was a silver-tongued devil who could talk his way in and do what he needed to do, but it was tremendous dedication to do it because he was under physical threats. And that happens all too often.
One of my first jobs in Oklahoma, I worked for a television company. We repossessed televisions from rural folks in Oklahoma. You're talking about, it was the most dangerous thing I ever did, you know. So I can imagine what it's like to go in and have to decide that the children have to be taken from a family. It must set off incredible rage. So I can't imagine anybody doing it. And when I saw the profiles of the people who did it, they just have to be really exceptional people. They have to have a skill set that's beyond what you need to be in Congress, you know.
Well, they also need policies and procedures and systems that will support them. You talked about traveling these great distances. It is truly a problem if you have to go back and forth to go into the office to get the records, then go out to the field, gather the information, then come back to the office to input the information into the records, rather than having technical access through really good up-to-date computer systems that would be a lot more efficient. One of my neighbors actually takes the what's called the child safe van around the legislative district. It's in just Coconino County, but if it happens to be in an area that's on any of the reservations, then it requires coordination with federal authorities because it becomes a federal issue if they're going to try to remove a child or investigate a particular case. So he's out there all the time with this large van so that it is a protected environment with no markings on it so that there's examination of the child by the professionals and an adequate and required and complete investigation. And sometimes it takes weeks to set that up to get all the parties available to do that.
When you're elected to the state legislature, what can you do there to support child protective services? Given the, and I know that there's been some reforms, and I think that you're in favor of the reforms. What can be done to strengthen the agency from the when you're in the legislature? What can a legislator do?
Oversight, paying attention to what's going on, asking the right questions, demanding the information that is needed. My predecessor, who was in the legislature one time, who lost 2 years ago, Tom Chabon, who was a good friend, when he was in the legislature, he asked questions, and the Department of Economic Security refused to provide him the information he asked for. I will not stand for that. It is absolutely critical that policymakers have access to information so they can monitor what's going on, that our investments are being well made and are being protected and accomplishing what they were intended to accomplish. That is what needs to be done. It was clearly that the legislature was asleep on this particular issue. I'm wide awake.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about another issue. Republicans are always talking about tax cuts, and we learned a couple of weeks ago that Arizona has cut corporate taxes for 24, I believe it's 23 out of the last 24 years. And in doing so, has shifted the burden of the cost of state government onto individuals, and particularly through the use of things like sales taxes, which are the most regressive type of tax. In other words, they punish the poor and benefit the wealthy. What's your stance on taxes, through the state and, you know, do we vote for another tax cut to bring business in?
You're absolutely correct about the number of tax cuts, and there was the latest round that was just passed by the last legislative session. You cannot tax cut your way to prosperity and still provide the needed public services. We're seeing that. We're absolutely seeing that in cutbacks to every part of what is true government responsibility. Public education is a public responsibility. The protection of children and adults, the providing of adequate health care, providing for the needs of the mentally ill. These are things that are issues that government has a responsibility for. And we keep cutting taxes and cutting taxes to the point that we're reaching a point of no return with these things. And we have, you know, millions of dollars of additional tax cuts that are going to go into effect and really put pressure on the state budget for FY16 and beyond because of those tax cuts. And some tax cuts are okay. Some tax credit programs are okay, but I have a simple test for tax credits and tax cuts. If you're going to take the money away from the budget, how are you going to replace it for needed public services, number one? Number two, what are you going to get for your investment? How many jobs? How much revenue coming in for new jobs? Are you going to have a sunset provision that says, oh, we'll review these tax cuts and see if they're accomplishing what intended to be accomplished? When I was interviewed by the Arizona Technology Council for a potential endorsement, and 2 years ago, the Arizona Technology Council would never have interviewed anybody like me. They said that those seems like reasonable things to do. And by the way, the Arizona Commerce Authority is actually doing some of these studies, economic impact studies, to see what these tax cuts or credits are accomplishing. And they gave me two of them to look at and asked me to provide feedback to them. And putting it frankly, my feedback to them was longer than the reports.
You're running against two of the most extreme members of the legislature, Brenda Barton and Bob Thorpe. What do they say when you debate them about these issues?
Well, it'd be nice if they would debate me. The first debate was on August 9th. It was at Yavapai College, Clarkdale campus. Brenda Barton did not come. Bob Thorpe did come. In the middle of the debate, he disappeared physically for 10 minutes in the debate. I mean, it's available online to see. He just disappeared. He attended the second debate, which was on September 22nd, because that was a clean elections debate, and he is a clean elections candidate, and he had to appear. Brenda Barton did not appear again. There were three additional debates that were scheduled, the one by the League of Women Voters of Verde Valley. The other was Northern Arizona Interfaith Council, which was going to be in Sedona to Church of the Red Rocks, and the Free Thinkers of Sedona. All three of those were canceled because none of the Republicans would come. I don't know what they're hiding from. I think they're afraid for the contrast between me and them to be shown, because they are definitely hiding.
I think if you look at the voter guide, you can see Lanny Morrison's answers to the questions. And obviously you represent, you have a certain point of view, but all of your answers are about what can be done exactly. And when I look at Bob Thorpe's answers, it's all ideology. It's all catchphrases, free market, job creators, states' rights, balanced budgets,
they continue.
Free choice in education, which is this giant boondoggle, right, where public funds are going to private and religious schools, basically, under various different guises as scholarships and whatnot.
Regarding Mr. Thorpe, all one has to do is look at his Twitter page, and you will see exactly where he comes from. He will post anything that is negative about the federal government. He will post anything that is negative about anyone or anything that seems to be in disagreement with his philosophy. I don't know who Bob Thorpe is, because he's the only member of the legislature who does not have a bio on the legislative website. I don't think he's ever created a job in his life. I don't know what he really has done for his background, but I do know that he likes to wave the flag of anti-government at the federal level and at the state level.
That's why he went running to Nevada to be next to Cliven Bundy during the standoff and is a big supporter of Cliven Bundy.
Although Mr. Tharp now says that he never supported Mr. Bundy, I would challenge him to look at the own interviews with him that are available on YouTube,
right,
and also what he's written about his visit there in op-ed pages like in the Arizona Daily Sun.
And Tharp was also the one that tried to set up a sale of a bulletproof vest for legislators in the basement of the Capitol against state law.
Well, he also introduced the bill that would have required any student in order to graduate from high school to swear a loyalty oath to the United States. We're already citizens of the United States.
Right. I'm sort of with Ben Franklin on this stuff. You know, I mean, swearing oaths, I don't think Americans should be asked to swear oaths. We're almost all, it might be a few people, disloyal to the country. Everybody's loyal. It's an imposition to do it.
It depends on your definition of disloyal. I would say that the people that support sovereignty against the federal government are disloyal to the government.
And he's introduced sovereignty bills, which would mean that that basically, I guess, Bob Thorpe gets to do exactly what he wants to do. I don't know, given that level of extremism, and we've investigated a little bit in Bob Thorpe's background, and what's interesting, we just couldn't find out anything about him. The bio doesn't lead to any of those little catches that you can find out who the guy is or what he actually did before he ran for office. We carefully read his book on the Constitution, which has nothing about the Constitution in it. He's changed his rhetoric. He used to call himself a constitutional author, but the amount of material in that book about the Constitution was almost zero.
It's interesting. In the clean elections debate, he referred to himself as a constitutional author. And Tom O'Halloran, who did participate in the debate, and of course Sylvia Allen was not there, and she won't be in any debates. Tom couldn't control himself anymore, and he said, I'm not a constitutional expert. Lanny's not a constitutional expert, and neither are you, Mr. Tharpe.
He even by the standards of sort of right-wing vision of the American Constitution, we've had several programs about it, he didn't really say anything about it. How about your other opponent, Brenda? I was calling her Barbara Barton, but Brenda Barton, she's running as traditional. She describes herself in her statement as a pragmatic, independent-minded rural conservative. Neither one of your opponents, Brenda Barton or Bob Thorpe, answered any of the questions put to them by the Arizona Republic on any of the issues. They're in the candidate statement pamphlet, but they didn't answer anything by the major Republican newspaper in Arizona.
Evidently, they don't want people to know what their position is on issues. But I take great exception to Ms. Barton saying that she's an independent. Through August 15th of this year, it's actually August 14th, on the financial reports that filed with the Secretary of State, this supposedly independent woman had 75% of her contributions from out of the district and from political action committees. In fact, there were $17,000 in out-of-district political action committee contributions, another $20,000 from out-of-district individual contributions, which included a number of lobbyists. My question is, who is she really representing? It appears that she's representing special interests and just takes orders from special interests. She also has $2,500 in contributions from somebody named Leonora Pusta. That's P-U-S-T-A. And if you Google her, you can find some very interesting information about her political contributions, which runs into the hundreds of thousands of dollars for special interest groups, particularly ones that either Karl Rove or the Koch brothers are behind.
Yeah, if you go on either one of Lanny Morrison's opponents' web pages, you'll find that they're endorsed by something called the National Federation of Independent Businesses. This is a group funded by the far right, and including the Koch brothers. They did a poll of small business people, and about a third of small business people are Republicans, about a third are Democrats, and about a third are independents. This group basically gives money only to right-wing Republicans. And so if you go on the web pages, a lot of these groups are not what they seem. The National Federation of Independent Businesses is a lobbying group set up by people like Karl Rove to lobby for Republican candidates. It's not a representative group of small business guys getting together and deciding, you know, what's good for small businesses and having a debate. I bet they never invited you to discuss small business with them, did they, Lanny?
No, or any business or anything with them.
it's telling if you look at the bills that they voted for and sponsored, especially those that they felt, you know, were important enough to sponsor. They were mostly bills that had to do with ideology, things like the legalized discrimination. If I want to claim a religious reason, I can refuse service to someone, or I can discriminate against them. If you go on azleg.gov and look at the bills they actually sponsored and voted for, it's all pretty extreme stuff, and there's virtually nothing for business.
And nothing practical.
They have been behind. The only thing that Ms. Barton could claim that's related to business ended up being dubbed the Ag Gag Bill, which put her in direct opposition with Sheriff Joe Arpaio. She wanted to take away authority of county sheriffs to investigate cases of animal abuse, like livestock.
Yeah, she and Sylvia Allen were behind a bill that would exempt ranch dogs from charges of their owners from charges of animal abuse.
Let me just say something about the religious freedom bill that you talked about, which was SB 1062. I grew up with religious discrimination directed at me. I'll tell you a simple story that won't take very long. Picture being in the Midwest on a sultry day in late August in the late 1940s, 90-some degree temperature, 90-some percent humidity, pre-air conditioning. The only thing you could do to cool off was to try to find a bottle of water to cool off in. So my father packed my mother and my brother and sister and me in the car, and we went to a lake, a public lake, about 20 miles from where we lived. And I just learned how to read. And when we walked up to this lake, there was a sign that said, "No Jews or dogs allowed." And I said to my father, "What does that sign mean?" And he went up to the sign, tore it down, and said it meant nothing. But it obviously meant something to the person who put up that sign. I absolutely refuse to go back to those days. And I will fight tooth and nail to prevent any kind of religious discrimination on any basis against anyone.
Let me say, Gary, we're
both raised Catholic, and it's funny for me coming from Oklahoma to see Catholics making sometimes common cause with the people who used to discriminate against them. In a small town in Oklahoma, they wouldn't allow my mother to join some of the women's clubs. When JFK ran for president, the Baptist Church took their money out of the bank that my father worked at. The owner was a Baptist, but two of the men who worked in the bank were Catholic. The Baptist Church took all their money out of them and moved them over to the Protestant bank. And so there's a, you know, one thing that people always disagree about, I think, we'll all agree, is about religion. I mean, the amount of religious agreement. And we can see that sometimes it's extreme, and we have parts of the world where it's really extreme right now.
Well, I learned a long time ago that the best public policy is made on a nonpartisan basis, that you reach across the aisle, you reach across houses of government to try to come up with common solutions. People ask me that, when you're elected, Lanny, how are you going to be able to deal with the kind of partisanship that exists? And I have a very simple answer. On November 5th, I will attempt to sit down face-to-face with all 30 senators who will be elected and all 59 other representatives in the House to see if there's one common area of interest we can agree on. If there's one, is there a second one? If there's a second one, is there a third one? Well, you know, whether it's the D-backs had a terrible season or whatever it happens to be, let's see if we can find commonality.
You just answered the question I was going to ask, I'd like to point out that if you go to look at the record of your two opponents, there has been absolutely no evidence that they will reach across the aisle or compromise their ideology in any way, shape, or form. They ignore the other party.
They do, and that's one reason why, the primary reason why I'm running, that we need to balance out this legislature so that people actually work together. You know, if we take something like the Medicaid restoration that was done, and people like to use the term expansion. It's not really expansion. It's restoring something that the voters voted in 2000 cover adults up to 100% of the federal poverty level. Brenda Barton and Bob Thorpe are two of the 36 members of the legislature who have been suing to try to have this repealed. And it's just one area that it is ignoring the positive things that are being done because of this law that was passed to restore the Medicaid expansion of Medicaid for adult who the voters wanted to be covered. And it's not costing the general fund any money because it's an assessment on hospitals. The hospitals were in desperate shape, particularly rural hospitals. In 2012, the hospitals had accumulated uncompensated care of $77 million. It represented 8.5% of their revenue. Since that bill was passed and these people have come back into the Medicaid program, their uncompensated care has been cut in half. More importantly, when the uncompensated care was at $777 million, it represented a cost shift to private insurance of roughly $2,000 per family, according to the Arizona Chamber. That knows a lot.
So that what happens if people don't have medical insurance, the hospitals don't get paid. And we've had people from the hospitals here in the Verde Valley or the hospital here in the Verde Valley, and it's millions of bucks of unpaid bills. And what extending Medicaid does means that at least they get some compensation. I don't think the hospitals are thrilled. They would like, you know, they say it's maybe 50% of their costs and stuff, but it's better than nothing. It's helped stabilize the health system, and health costs, the rise in health costs nationally, not just in Arizona, have been dropping because of changes in the health law.
Absolutely. But it's also helped grow the economy in terms of jobs. That according to the Arizona Department of Administration, the chief economist says 10,000 jobs were created in the healthcare industry in the last year alone. So it's one of the few parts of the economy that is actually growing in this state. And they want to spend and continue to spend in these lawsuits on things that they just flat out disagree with, that have become law, that costs us millions of dollars in hard taxpayer earned money every year to defend.
We keep suing the federal government, and trying to, and we spend millions doing it, yet we get a, you know, I've mentioned this many times before, we get about 2.5 times more money from the federal government in the state of Arizona than we actually contribute to the federal government.
Yeah, I refer to us as a net debtor state.
Right.
Because this has been consistent. But in this particular instance over the Medicaid restoration, they're in effect suing the governor.
Yeah, they are suing the governor and a small group of courageous Republicans who voted with the Democrats to extend or, as you say, restore Medicaid cuts. And it's in this part of Arizona, it's thousands of people now have coverage that didn't have coverage before.
I'd like to drop back one thing also that's in Ms. Barton's comments on voter guides. She portrays herself as a big supporter of community colleges. And to me, that is truly a hollow statement. Let's take Yavapai College as an example. To me, it is completely disingenuous to say you're a big supporter of community colleges when less than 3% of the budget of Yavapai College is supported by state revenues. Less than 3%. If you go down to the Valley, Maricopa County, it's roughly 1% of the state budget. If you go to Northland Pioneer College, which is in the western part of this legislative district in Navajo County, it's also in the 1% category. It is utterly and completely disingenuous and false.
That's actually one of the reasons we have a crisis with colleges today, with students graduating with massive debt, is because the states have cut so much out of the budget for the universities and community colleges that the students have to take out, you know, their tuition is greatly increased, and they have to pay more.
How would you sum up the most important, we have 3 minutes left, would you sum up in three minutes or 2.5 minutes, what's the most important point you want to make in this campaign, Lanny Morrison?
The theme of my campaign is tackling real issues. We have, as a state, a black eye in the view of the rest of the country. I want to get us off the Comedy Channel. We are on there all the time because of the bills that we introduce, the bills that we pass in the law, the ridiculous amount of litigation that goes on trying to justify unconstitutional legislation that's passed. We need to get away from the image of being unwelcoming, uncaring, and dangerous. So that's why I'm focusing on public education, health care, infrastructure, forest health, and water as our major issues that we need to deal with, particularly in rural Arizona. This district is part of Navajo, part of Gila, part of Coconino, and part of Yavapai counties. It is a very diverse district. It takes 3 hours to get from one end to the other. And it's about time we have a representative who tries to do something for this district, not supporting special interests out of Phoenix and nationally.
My impression of Bob Thorpe and Brenda Barton is they represent an ideology, not Arizonans, because I really don't think Arizonans believe in all the ideology. And that seems to be the only thing that they represent is these ideological ideas. They don't have any kind of practical solutions to our problems.
They're extremists in a district that is comprised of non-extreme people.
So, Lanny Morrison, you have a meet and greet in Cornville. You want to tell folks about it?
It's on this Thursday from 5 to 7 o'clock, and it's at the home of Dr. Lisa Oliver. And you can get information on it from my Facebook page. That's Morrison for Arizona House. That's the tagline.
And it's a meet and greet. Come and talk to Lanny. You can ask him all the questions that we forgot to ask him.
And I'll be candid and truthful.
Good, good. This Sunday, Democrats of the Red Rock is having one of their wine and cheese parties at our office right next to Judy's restaurant from 5 to 7. It's a lot of fun. A lot of candidates show up and give a short talk about what they do. You can hear all our podcasts.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.